Greetings, friends. It is I, Dee Trussell, and you are listening to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. Welcome. We have an excellent episode for you today. Raghu Marcus is here with us. He is the host of the Mind Rolling podcast. One of my great friends. We're actually working on a book together, and this is an episode that we recorded during a live DTFH family gathering. If you're interested in connecting with Raghu, all the links you need to find him will be at duncantrussell.com. And if you would like to subscribe to our Patreon, then you can join us every Friday for a family gathering. You can hang out with us on Wednesday for our Dune book club, or drop in on Tuesdays for our weekly meditation journey into boredom. You will get bored. Now, let's welcome back to the DTFH Raghu Marcus, who wants to invite you to join the Ram Dass Instagram Live Soul Music Series, which is live Sundays at 5 p.m. at ramdass.org/music. All those links will be at duncantrussell.com. Now, everybody, please welcome back to the DTFH Raghu Marcus. All right, Raghu, you're on right now with my deepest core sweeties. This is on a video stream that we've been doing every week. And for the last hour or so, I've been rambling, not just about aliens, but about the, I guess you could say, the way that our desire to see aliens is a sort of longing for the miraculous. And who knows, maybe they are real, but I wonder if you could, maybe we could talk a little bit about that, or if anything else you want to talk about.
Hi, everybody out there. Nice to feel you through Duncan. The aliens, I don't care about aliens. There are aliens everywhere. We could not be, you know, the only people, you know, that have the ability to think, act, and, you know, move from one plane of consciousness to the other. It's impossible. We cannot be that. It cannot be that, right? So we are assuming, you know, all that shit, Roswell, all of that stuff. It's all real. Actually, I had a an engineer, because I worked in the music business for a number of years, a famous engineer. He did all of Steely Dan stuff, Roger Nichols. He's no longer with us. But anyhow, his uncle was very embedded in, you know, national security, et cetera, and he used to go over to his uncle's house, and his uncle had all sorts of stuff that proved out all of the Roswell stuff. For instance, he had pictures of, you know, that nobody's ever seen. And the day that his uncle died, he told me, a bunch of feds came in and they took everything out of his uncle's house.
Are you kidding? How have you never, how long have we been friends?
And you, I never
just
told you
now
that.
Now
yeah.
You're telling me this? This is crazy to me.
Yeah, they also had video footage which show the, of the Kennedy assassination, apparently, of that there's footage missing that we've never seen that shows, you know, I think he said, you know, this is really going crazy conspiracy stuff, but that one of the secret security, the security people shot him, okay? And it was all, you know, so he told me all this stuff. You know, he actually went, they actually went to see it when I was in a session. He said, I got to go over here because my friend is over there doing another session. He's got all this footage. Can you imagine? So all this shit that they've suppressed everything, absolutely everything.
Why? Now, this to me is something that I always scratch my chin at. Why? Why would there be, why wouldn't they just let us know? It seems like, don't you think that if suddenly the government revealed there's UFOs, there's aliens,
we communicate with them sometimes, but we don't really know what they want. That people would freak out a little bit, but then everything would just go back to normal within a week or two. You know, like, yeah. like humans are so, you know, stuck yeah. in our habitual patterns that it really doesn't yeah. matter. Like the sun could change into the face of an alien and it would freak everybody out for about a year. And then we would just be living underneath
yeah,
the face
right,
of an
right,
alien
yeah.
staring at us. Nobody would change.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely true. But the why is yeah. like saying, why are there trees? I mean, just look at what we have going on right now. That's a big, how can we have this going on in this pandemic with this, you know, buffoon? I mean, there's no word to use. Just, I mean, it's just stupid. You know, the Clorox, everything that, you know, now it's chloroquine, you know, the stuff you use for malaria, which we've taken a lot in India. You know, I know all about that drug. That drug makes you sick without the side effects they're talking about, which is potentially having a heart attack. You know, it's a really nasty drug. Anyhow, why? It's, you know, it's like when we go to India, you see all of this kind of stuff. There's no sense in it whatsoever. And you go, why? And I always tell people who are coming over the first time, there's one thing you can't do. Ask why. Because you'll never get the answer. You know, it's forget about it. And this is the same thing. You know, there's no, it's people, you know, the patriarchal power that be, that is just, it's control. There's just, it wants to control. It has that propensity to control.
I see.
But you were talking about longing for what? What did you just said before?
Well, you know, I played a clip of Terrence McKenna talking about UFOs as being a kind of projection of the human psyche or the collective, that you're looking at these archetypes that appear, that it's almost as though one of the beautiful things he says is, you know, look at human DNA itself, look at humanity as a kind of language, a communication, that the what we are, you know, is the alien. It just, we happen to be it, so it doesn't seem that miraculous. And, you know, one of the things Ram Dass said that I think about a lot is this idea that when you get, I guess you could say, tuned up or tuned in or whatever, suddenly everything does seem like a miracle. Do you, meaning that, you know, yeah, you there within that is this potential of your life could become so miraculous that UFOs would seem like secondary considerations. They would be vehicles or whatever that would be somewhat interesting. But if you were really connected to what is happening right now, that stuff really wouldn't seem as exciting as what's right under our nose, so to speak.
Yeah. That's totally right on. Absolutely. I have a little something, because you prompted me earlier about the longing thing is so in core to everything that we came back from India. It's a bit spiritual. Do you think we should get into it at all?
Yeah, I'd love it. Thank you. Thanks for doing this, Raghu. Last minute, too. Thank you very much. Love your camouflage, by the way.
Sure. Okay, so, you know, this is around, I actually did a podcast this past week, and I just happened, it was with somebody who's new coming onto the network, wonderful young woman named Nikki Walton, and I knew she liked Rumi. Who doesn't like Rumi, right?
Right.
But I had this book that I hadn't looked at in a long time by Andrew Harvey, who's translated a lot of Rumi stuff and so on. And then I just started going through it, and I was like, oh, God, there's stuff in here that's so relevant to today. It's like mind-blowing. So this one particular, let me just read a little bit from it, and then, you know, we can talk about it for as long as you want. So he's saying that basically, huh?
Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
It stuttered for a second, but I can hear you.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. Okay. So he's saying basically never, ever recover or even want to from the wound of divine longing. So you will come to long with your whole being to participate now in the vast transformation that destiny is demanding of the human race. Right? Wow, okay, well, that sounds like right on for right this moment. And then he says, Rumi's a madman, and he's trying to do nothing less than send the human race mad with divine love. And here, a little poem, Rumi goes, my poetry is like Egyptian bread. Night passes and you cannot eat it. Eat it while it's fresh, before the dust settles. Its place is in the tropics of awareness. It dies in this world because of the cold. Is that so great? I mean,
wow,
really great. So he ends up, so the, Andrew Hardy ends up, you know, talking about what it's like, what Rumi's poetry is like. And it's absolutely awake. Awakening has a very fierce edge, the edge of the sword of discrimination, right? And the sword of ecstasy, it has a fire in it. And you have to consent when you listen to and read Rumi to be sliced by that sword and invaded by that fire. I mean, these people are like, they got it all going, you know. It's
wow.
So he compares this to, I don't know if you know, and many people out there may not know who she is, you know, this, because this book was written a long time ago. Yeah, you know, well, in the 90s. Maria Callas. Do you know who Maria Callas is?
I've heard of her. But
famous opera singer with an angelic voice. I mean, a transporting type voice. So he says, what Maria Callas is doing when she sings is pleading for love against patriarchal madness. That voice is always there, burning away, begging love to win in a world which is being ruined by a crazy masculine hardness and deadness of heart. I mean, he's describing, you know, the thing right now. It's just, you know, it's mind blowing.
Yeah.
And then, so this all leads into, so longing leads into the idea of, that he uses a word for, which is a tough word. It may be a word that everybody's going to go, oh shit, these people are fundamentalist maniacs. And that would be, I'm sorry about that. And that word's adoration. But that means letting the hand of the divine reach out to us with a cup of mystic wine and say, drink, be drunk, so that you won't mind that you are bleeding. You won't mind that you are sobbing. You won't mind that you are dying. It's letting the wine make you drunk with the lucid bliss of mystic knowledge. And with that lucid bliss, you will work tirelessly. You will suffer tirelessly. You will open again and again to the power that is trying to save the world through you, through all of us, at this very late moment. I mean, they could have written this yesterday about, you know, what the hell we're going through, right? I mean, and he goes on, it doesn't matter if you... It does not matter if you've used, you know, the experiences, your experience to enter into the you know, the glory, okay, to be a transmitter as far as you can be of the divine love at this moment. It's much too late to care whether we are going to suffer or not, whether it's going to be painful or not. It's clearly going to be appallingly painful to watch the world fall apart. It is clearly going to involve suffering on all of our parts, in all of our hearts. What does it matter? Be drunk with this longing. Open your hearts endlessly to the love of God and never close them. Allow the light to burn you and transform you so that you can stand with Rumi and the friends of Rumi, the mystics of the earth, and play your part in the transformation of the world that is our responsibility historically at this moment.
Wow, that's so cool. It's so crazy. It's so crazy.
It's crazy.
It's completely crazy. That to me is the beauty of the thing, is because it is an invitation and to go nuts. And I think that this is the one of the top ways that whatever that thing you're talking about, what McKenna called dominator culture, versus a partnership society. And it was it's a patriarchal. Yeah. But what he said, you know, he didn't say this, but to me, one of the qualities of domination, one of the qualities of people who are trying to dominate you is they want you to think you're going crazy when you're not. They want to produce a kind of boundary that should you cross it, you have entered into woo-woo land. You're losing your mind. You've lost it. You're out of your fucking gourd. What, do you really think you're connecting with the divine? Shut the fuck up. What are you? What are you really? You're one toke over the line, baby. And this, to me, is like the people you got to watch out for. But weirdly, we also need friends in our lives who can tell us you're actually one toke over the line. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
A tremendous thank you to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode of the DTFH. I love technology and I love therapy, and I love it when the two merge. That's what BetterHelp is. My friends, these are weird times, and if you're feeling a little off balance, that's probably a normal reaction to what's going on in the world these days. BetterHelp is there for you. They will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. This is not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's actual professional counseling done securely online. You can log into your account anytime. You can send a message to your counselor. You'll get timely, thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions so you will never have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room again like you have to with traditional therapy. BetterHelp, it's committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed. Check out their website. They have maybe 100 pages of testimonials of people who have benefited from their amazing service. You can go to betterhelp.com/Duncan. That's better H-E-L-P, and join the over 1 million people taking charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they're recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. Again, that's betterhelp.com/Duncan, and you'll get 10% off your first month of therapy. Thank you, BetterHelp.
Yeah, there's a balance, but the idea of going into the mystic reality, you know, that place. I mean, it's just so many. And by the way, you know, these people, you know, they emanate from the Muslim tradition, right? Rumi, yes. Hafiz, all. I mean, there's a whole pile of them. I mean, we have this great guy on Be Here Now Network, by the way, Omid Safi, who's like a Islamic teacher at one of the big schools in North Carolina. He's just incredible. He introduces all of this stuff. It's got such passion. You know, this is the mystic part of the religion. You know, it's the part, it takes it, I mean, it still uses the Quran as a basis, but the interpretation of it is so wildly beyond anything that we hear about on a day-to-day basis. And of course, we are in such fear of this in the West, right? I mean, it's just so it's only through someone like Rumi and Hafiz that we can actually get the essence and the power of the passion of being able to deal with the world, because you're so embedded in that longing, you're so embedded in moving into the awareness of the mystic part of ourselves. You know,
Raghu, I was wondering if maybe you could talk a little. This is one of the qualities of you and Krishnadas and anyone who I know who actually got to meet Neem Karoli Baba, is there is a quality of heartbreak there, a quality of not like schmaltzy sadness, but like real sadness that, I don't know if sadness is the right word for heartbreak, that you don't get to be around the embodied version of Neem Karoli Baba. I wonder if you could talk about that a little bit.
That's not true. I don't have any, no, there's no sadness and there's no heartbreak or anything around that. When it happened all those years ago, when he left.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And you know how fast I shoved that person, because we all had different reactivity to it. You know how fast I shoved that so far down inside that I couldn't find it for like 10, 15 years? Like within 5 minutes. I mean, Ram Dass called me. I mean, I can still hear his voice going, Raghu Maharaji left his body, 6 hours ago, whatever he said. So shock. I went into shock, and everything you're saying, sadness, heartbreak, all of that. Then I took that and I put it into a ball, and I threw that thing so far deep in me and went into spiritual bypass for like 10 years. Okay. I mean, I think many of us did that. Right. But yeah. it took a lot of work to understand if that's what it was all about, like a physical something that generated this thing. And then that physical thing was gone. Then, you are lost, boy.
Right.
I mean, fortunately we had mentors who carried on from that time and really helped us understand. I mean, you got to remember, I was 23 years old when I went to India. Okay, so
that's crazy, man.
Yeah, so it's, I was a little schmageggy and also completely naive and completely had all of the stuff that you love to play with over the years at the retreats we've done in Maui, in terms of cynicism and, yeah. What do you mean about, we had all of that stuff going on. So, it took a while, but to understand this has nothing to do with the physical something that we were there, sucking at the breast kind of a thing. It appeared like that while we were there, but we were living in an acid zone.
Raghu,
that kind of,
okay, I gotcha. That's cool. To me though, I have seen moments, poignant moments, when y'all are relating some encounter with that being that, I guess sadness is the wrong word for it. Maybe it's just longing. It's whatever it is sweet. I don't mean to portray it in a negative light. It isn't negative at all. It's one of the most beautiful things to witness and to see, not just Ram Dass, but people who maybe folks on who are listening right now or watching right now aren't even familiar with. Just people you meet at the retreats who were lucky enough to meet Neem Karoli Baba. When they talk about him, sometimes they just freely start crying. Maybe they don't even realize they're crying, but they just start crying. And it's a really beautiful thing. And to me, it's always been a testament to whatever that encounter must have been like.
Yeah, but again, you go into that space, and it's a space, the best example, again, one time we did with Ram Dass, a retreat, actually, not a retreat, it was a workshop in his house, right? And it was with Roshi Joan Halifax, who you know.
Yes.
You had that incredible encounter with when you first went to his house.
Yes.
And a couple of other people, I can't remember. And at one point, somebody, I think it was Ramesh, who was doing the moderating, Ram Dass's co-writer of the last couple of books, and he said, what was it like, being around Neem Karoli Baba? And so Ram Dass went into the space, exactly how you're describing, because he went into the space and he got really deep, you could tell he was just like swimming in this kind of liquid love thing, and this is all, talk about woo-hoo, this is all that, it's just words, except when Ram Dass, he came out of it at one point, he was just in a reverie, and he came out of it, and he said, he was just empty. He was so empty. He was empty. He said it over and over. I just did a podcast, by the way, that's up on Mind Northern now with Roshi, and talked about that particular moment. And I said, one time, I think it was with you, actually. We did something with her way, way back years ago. And I said, well, what does Neem Karoli Baba mean to you? You're like a Zen abbot, This is like, you have nothing to do with bhakti yoga or subject, object, anything. And she said, when I look at his picture and I look in his eyes, empty. I see empty, emptiness. And so the reality of what emptiness, which is, which Robert Thurman, who we love, right, calls the womb of bliss. Emptiness is the womb of bliss.
Wow.
It's opposite what people think,
right?
You know, and it's available all the time. And the fact that some of us did get over to experience that in a human being just gave it. I mean, why? I have no idea. I mean, I think it's we were denser is one reason. We were very dense and needed, you know,
right,
the hit over the head with the sledgehammer, you know, okay, you are not this thing that you think you are. And we were able to experience that, get very experiential with that. And then, of course, Ram Dass is the, you know, greatest proponent of bringing that back and be able to transmit that, but nothing to do with the body. And the reality is that access is there, as Rumi just said, right, in those readings that I just did. It is available to everyone. It just, there's a point in your life where things are just so shit that you don't want to go on the way that you have been going on, thinking that your mind is real and every thought is real and your story is real and all of your parents and your family and the school and the work, it's all real, that you start to look out for something else. And that is what Rumi's talking about, longing. And that's what I, when you mentioned it to me, that longing is the first thing. It's your phone call to me, you know, to go to Maui and go to the retreat and me telling you to go, you know, it's that,
yes,
initial thing. Okay. You know, I got it, you know, it's that thing. And it doesn't involve, I got to get a, you know, a nice car and a house and a job and, you know, something else happens. Now, part of this is due to causes and conditions that, you know, make people so super unhappy, or really tough stuff, like people dying around you, like yourself getting a disease.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously that you know, sends people off into a path on its own, you know, it has its own volition. But it's also just, there's something that you walk into a store. I mean, I know people who walked into a New Age store and they were playing Krishnadas chanting, and they just perked up and went, oh, wow, what's, you know, what's that? And they followed that down, that so that longing came through the music, the mantras.
Yeah.
You know, so it happened. And of course, psychedelics is an enormous way for that longing, because once you touch that place, you want more of it, right? That's obvious too.
Some folks want to ask you questions. I'm having some technical difficulty with the normal way we do this. For those of you listening, I can't see the chat in Crowdcast, so I'm still on Discord. But here's a question for you, Raghu. Do you think there's a difference between meditation as a form of understanding the inner workings of one's own mind / ego, and meditation as a form of communion with the divine? If so, what are the differences? Do you practice in both ways?
Yep. Yeah, that's a great question.
Yeah. Jesus.
I love that question. Really fantastic. Absolutely. I mean, there's a basic level that of meditation practice, which, I mean, I recommend to everybody, is Vipassana or insight meditation that was brought back to the West by three people, primarily Jack Kornfield, Sharon Salzberg, and Joseph Goldstein, and we've been friends with them, you know, forever. And that there's a basic foundation that absolutely leads one inside, getting to know, get familiar with yourself, with that part of yourself, both the part that you're dealing with, which is all the habits and the conditioning and all of that, and understanding that and having awareness and, you know, the mindfulness part and the concentration part, absolutely necessary. And then there's the other part, which Ram Dass used to talk about. He went, you know, he did like weeks and weeks of this kind of practice, which, you know, he tells that funny story in the movie Becoming Nobody about, yeah, I was sitting there in the monastery and I went off into a 6-hour sex fantasy and nobody knew anything, you know, that kind of thing. So, but he said in the end, he was able to come back and use that, the power of the, of being able to go inside and connect with that place that's behind all of the story and the thoughts and all of the emotions and all that, and be able to then go into an open heart, develop the open heart, and not be afraid of what comes up through that open heart. Because a lot of stuff comes up, you know, people do, you know, even just chanting and they start to open up and it opens up everything, not just the ecstasy and the glory, right? It opens up pain as well, which again, Rumi was just talking about. And you, so the reality is that the way that they work with each other, you know, meditation as a basic practice to get to know oneself and meditation as a practice to go through the heart to communicate with the divine presence is fantastic. Great question.
That, yes, and that's a great answer too. Here's another question from Angel. Question for Raghu. Does it ever feel tiresome or a burden to be passing on such strong, loving energy all the time?
If I had any idea of what I was doing or not doing, I would be really in trouble, okay? when I have some idea and I'm thinking about it, then, you know, I'm lost. You know, I had a great mentor named Casey Tiwari, who was one of the closest beings to Amin Karoli Bala. And he used to say, he was like the Mr. Natural comic book from Crumb. You remember that comic book artist? I forget his first name.
R. Crumb.
R. Crumb, yeah. Mr. Natural, you know. He was like that with us. He'd see us going off into, you know, really screwy places. And he'd say things like, "My boy, if you think you're doing it, you are lost."
Cool.
If you think you're the doer. So whenever I, you know, realize that that's happening, and some, you know, it happens like in stuff that you and I do together, retreats or podcasts or whatever, and I'll catch myself and go, "Okay, yeah, that's fun pontificating, didactic bullshit coming out of non-experiential stuff." I mean that because you know. And then I have to do as Jack Kornfield says, yeah, we're human. It's okay. It's okay. You know, so you're not judging yourself and all of that stuff. But no, I mean, you know, what's it like Christ, right? Where two or more share are there, I'm there, you know. So the sharing, and it's what Ram Dass has been all about. It's the legacy, the powerful legacy of his. When I said to him last year, why did you, Neem Karoli Baba said, don't talk about me in the West. Well, that's all you did. Why'd you do that? I mean, I knew that, of course, Maharaji, this was all perfectly planned to, there was no doubt that he knew, of course, Ram Dass, you know, he sent Ram Dass to do this. It wasn't, and Ram Dass, but said, as a human being, he said, you know, I had this jewel. I could not share it. He couldn't. Right. He couldn't do anything. He could only do that thing, right? And so there's joy in it, and there's in the doing of it, you stop thinking about yourself. Time and space goes away. So, you know, as we're in this moment, there isn't anything I'd rather do. I mean, if we're sitting around just socially, you and I mean, we're doing the same thing, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's all, and whenever I know that I'm going off into any kind of BS, my bullshit meter comes up and goes, whoopsies, you know, it's okay, but, you know, shut the fuck up.
It's okay, shut the fuck up. It's so good, Raghu. I love this aspect of it because it's so liberating. You know, I was... I was at one of the retreats talking to someone, and I could feel them putting something on me that just isn't there. You know, like I could feel like some, I don't know, they were trying to mysticalize me or something, only because I told them about these retreats, you know, and which is not difficult to do at all. It requires zero meditation practice. You know, you just, it's like telling people where good food is or something. You know, it's like, oh, I know a great restaurant. You know, if I tell you where a great restaurant is, you don't, and then you start telling me, oh my God, thank you so much. I went and ate at that restaurant. I really appreciate all the great food you cooked for me. It's like, wait, I just told you where the restaurant was. I'm not the chef. You know, don't you, if you start thinking that, then we're both in big fucking trouble. And I remember saying to him, I just want you to know, I don't know what I'm doing. I have no idea at all, anything. And I felt guilty about that ever since then. Because I saw him seem disappointed. He seemed so disappointed. And I meant it. I didn't mean it in some, like, you know, false humility way. I have no idea what I'm doing. And that, to me, it's so nice when I hear your articulation of that being okay. And I've heard Roshi Joan Halifax at these retreats. I don't know if you remember, this was a few retreats back. She did this wonderful talk on Zen koans. And the idea being that they put you in a place of not fucking knowing. That's the whole point. It's like they scramble you up enough so you don't have to be stuck in knowing, which is a real mess, you know, if you suddenly start thinking, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, everybody out there, Duncan's full of shit because his actual, what's totally inside him, which has come out more and more and more, and it's the naturalness of caring and kindness and sharing and reaching out is beyond anything he or I could think about, okay? And I got proof. I get mail. I mean, you know, at Love Serve, remember, we get mail every week, you know. Oh, yeah, I got, the latest one. Did I send it to you? I don't know if I sent it to you because I was supposed to start sending you this stuff.
I don't. But
the latest, it was about Midnight Gospel. It was about, I saw, they didn't know you, me, or anyone, Ron, nothing. They happened on Midnight, this is really great, right? Happened on Midnight Gospel. Maybe they saw the episode that I'm in, which I'm still pissed about that I didn't have a name. My dog doesn't have a name in this episode. I'm
what?
Really, everybody has
you.
A name.
That's a mistake. Oh my God, that's a mistake. I gave you a name. I didn't know that. No. That's bullshit. But you're in there.
It could have been Spot. Spot would have been good. You know, Spot the dog. Anyhow, that person went there and they found you through, you know, knew nothing, and that spun, talk about karma, right? Talk about the reality of how this stuff happens. We have no idea.
No.
So you have no idea when you're with somebody and they're coming on to you about, you know, being a teacher or something like that, and you're saying, are you out of your mind? But they're not out of their minds, and this is something that's beyond you, beyond me, you know, any of this. I mean, just what's happening right now, we have no idea.
No idea.
We have no idea. We don't know anything. I mean, the reality behind all of this that we see glimpses of, you know, and certainly through psychedelics is one major way, through a book like Be Here Now, through a podcast. I mean, it's staggering how this works and delightful, isn't it?
Delightful is the best word for it. And every time I get to hang out with you like this, my life gets exponentially better. Raghu, thank you for coming on, for gracing everybody with your presence. Do you think you could tell folks how they can connect to your podcast or to the foundation or what y'all have going on right now? Because you've got this huge online thing happening now.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, we were kind of prepared for what's gone down with this pandemic and not being able to gather. So we've been moving into, we had already been offering tons of online courses and stuff. And now, of course, some of the retreats that are going to, you know, we're postponing, canceled, we have to do online. But definitely put your email into, go to ramdas.org, put your email in there. We're, like every week, wonderful Rachel sends out resources for resilience. Boy, and you know, we could all use that, which is different, either articles, talks, podcasts, films, you know, all of it. That would be very helpful. And the other thing is go to BeHereNowNetwork.com. And I do I introduce Ram Dass. This is what Duncan did all these years ago. He called me up and goes, wait a minute, why did you, you know, podcast? And I come out of the radio business, so it wasn't that crazy for me. And he said, yeah, just put Ram Dass talks, introduce them and contextualize them a little bit. And so we're doing that. That's Ram Dass Here and Now on the Be Here Now on BeHereNowNetwork.com. And also I do Mind Rolling, which he got me into and helped me start. And I mean, yes, you get this little mixer and you do this and you attach it to that. Yeah. And so that's why Duncan, I always say this, is my guru, my podcast guru. So yeah, go to go to BeHereNowNetwork.com and you'll catch all of it. You know, incredible podcast.
For folks listening to this on the audio podcast section of things, the links for this will be at DuncanTrussell.com. I'm going to use this as a podcast. We just did a podcast. Thank you, Raghu. I really appreciate it. I'll call you later on today. I want to chat.
Okay.
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 See
all
you,
right.
Raghu. Bye.
Ram Ram. Ram Ram. Bye bye.
Bye.
That was Raghu Marcus, everybody. All the links you need to find Raghu will be at DuncanTrussell.com. Much thanks to BetterHelp for supporting this episode of the DTFH. And I will see y'all next week. I'm losing my voice.